Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. This is the intersection of sexuality and reality. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth, and we've got another great episode for you today. The Latter Gay Stories Podcast is your opportunity to understand the intersection of sexuality and reality, where it meets at LGBTQ Avenue and LDS Street. And today's episode is another great one. If you like and follow the Latter Gay Stories Podcast and want to help us to take this message to other areas and into deeper circles within the LDS and LGBT communities, we invite you to share, like, and comment on this episode, especially if you're on one of our social media sites like YouTube, on our YouTube channel, or the Facebook page where you're watching it. You can comment below if you do have questions for today's guests, or if you want to make a comment about what you're hearing in this podcast. And if you're listening to it on one of our audio versions through one of our audio podcast players like Google, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and others, we invite you to subscribe to this channel and receive content exactly and as quickly as we release it. Or, and in addition to, if you want to help financially support the podcast, we're always in need of financial donations to help us continue bringing these stories. There are a few ways you can donate to the podcast. The first, and maybe the easiest, is by logging on to the website at lattergaystories.org and clicking on the donate link, a quick and easy button there that'll allow you to make a one-time or a monthly donation to the podcast. We thank those people who are making one monthly donations to the podcast that keep it running and moving forward. Or the other easy way of doing it is if you're Venmo friendly, hit us up on Venmo at Latter Gay Stories and make a donation there. Again, we want to thank you for joining us on this episode and invite you once again to share, like, and comment on these on this episode and others as you listen to them through the Latter Gay Stories podcast avenues. Today's guest is pretty exciting. I'm excited to have him on the podcast today because he's Utah famous, Provost Special, and a Mormon memer.
Yep, that's right.
I want to welcome to the podcast Daniel Spencer.
Hey, thank you so much.
It's good to have you here. The exciting part, I mean, how do we introduce you? Maybe Mormon memer is a little boring.
Yeah, I don't know. That's usually what they refer to me as. They're always like, oh, Mormon meme. Online comedian?
Online comedian? The Provo Ho?
Provo Ho Life, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the name.
So now that you're completely out, we can call you the Provo Ho? Is that what
yeah,
it is?
Yeah, still, I guess. Sure.
Stand-up comedian?
Yeah, stand-up comedian.
The whitest guy from Zimbabwe?
Yes, exactly. That's definitely how I identify.
So you'll notice, yeah, Daniel's got an accent. So where are you from?
I'm from Harare, Zimbabwe. So that's in Africa. Most people think that's part of South Africa. And it's like, no, it's a whole separate country. So Zimbabwe, just from the capital and the capital city there.
Born and raised?
Born and raised, yeah. I did grow up with an American dad. My mom was Zimbabwean. They kind of moved over there for like business stuff. Because they didn't have college degrees, and it was like easier to get into business over there. And so, yeah, that was just basically the plan. My mom was like, hey, you've been fired from so many jobs here in America. Why don't we try Zimbabwe? And then like they went there and they were like, oh, yeah, this works out way better. So,
and we like it.
Yeah.
So you eventually made your way to Provo, attending BYU, and recently came out.
I did. Yeah.
And maybe we should also throw in there just as a little teaser. At one time was Provo's most eligible.
Oh, yes, yeah, on a straight dating show.
You were on a straight dating show. And that, we'll talk a little bit about that, but oh, how the tides have turned.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what tangled webs we weave.
Yeah, it's been an interesting ride for sure. Like going straight, well, that was the interesting part, was going from like a straight dating show to coming out immediately. Like a few weeks after I had been eliminated from the show, I think a lot of people were taken aback. At least in the like LDS community, in other communities, everyone else was like, "No, yeah, like it was pretty obvious."
Yeah, Ray Charles could see this.
Yeah. That's great.
Interesting. So we're going to talk about that. We want to talk a little bit about your story, the fact that you are a BYU student, mm-hmm. And what it's like coming out at BYU, because you're kind of in a, we've had on the podcast a few BYU students. You've got the Matt Eastons, the Sarah Cunhas, the, I mean, Noteworthy's got a few members of Noteworthy that are LGBT. Mm-hmm. So you're joining a crowd of really great people who are doing hard things in the heart of the lion's den, coming out in Utah County and at BYU. So I'll definitely want to talk about that. But maybe as we start the podcast, tell us a little bit about yourself. So I grew up in Zimbabwe. At what point did you realize I'm different?
That's a good question. I've been trying to think about that for a long time, because I'm like, when did I kind of know, you know? And I think it was when I was really young. You know, I think a lot of people just assume that it's like something that changes, or that it's because I have like a lot. I grew up with four sisters, and so like some people are like, well, maybe it was because of that, like just the influence. I was like, no, like I was definitely like privy to Barbies a lot more than I was to action men, right? Like I was always super jealous that like girls could dress up and I couldn't. Like I was like, why is this a thing? Like, why can't I be a part of this whole, like, all this stuff? And so I think that was something that I realized early on, like around 6 years old. I knew that I, like, was intrigued by it, but at the same time, I had a lot of guy cousins who were very, you know, bros, who were, like, athletic and all that sort of stuff. And so that was, it was interesting, because I kind of knew, but I was too afraid to kind of, like, be open about it. I was like, no, I need to be like my cousins. I need to talk about sports. And it ended up being like, I was the awkward kid, because I was like, yeah, rugby's a good thing.
Check out those tight pants. I mean,
his butt looks amazing.
Yeah. How does he do that? Yeah, a little awkward.
Yeah.
So, growing up, and I understand that, there were a lot of people who come from families that have, like, a sister heavy, like multiple female siblings.
Yeah.
And that's an easy excuse to say, well, that's the reason why.
That's the reason, yeah.
Yeah. So what about growing up in the church early on? Young Men's, that program, was there a struggle there with trying to understand your identity? Or was it a typical Mormon story where it was try to shut it off like a light switch, bury it in a box, and not acknowledge it?
It was interesting growing up in the church in Zimbabwe, particularly because you had the LDS influence, but you also had the very conservative African influence. And so a lot of the time I felt really just like intimidated. I was at an old boys school where like kids would get beaten up because, you know, they were kind of effeminate in some ways. I remember one kid came out as bi. He was like the first one to ever do anything like that in our school, and everyone wanted to beat him up. And it was really funny because I think he was like trained in Taekwondo or something, and this kid tried to like fight him and he beat the crap out of him. And I was like, oh yeah, that's, I was like, yeah, like, again, silent in the wings, but I was like, yeah,
so you're jumping on Google how to learn Taekwondo.
Yeah, I was like, if that's what I need to do to come out, maybe that's the option. But like, that was an interesting part of it. And I was like, okay, so I have to balance these, all these influences where I'm expected to be very manly, very, you know, in the loop with all the manly stuff that I have to do. Basically just a very heteronormative behavior. I had to know who the sports people were. I wasn't allowed to do like plays or theater and that sort of stuff. It was always like priority is like, how can you be the most manly you can be? And then we'll figure out all the extracurriculars that you can do on top of that. So I'd sneak off to, it was interesting because there was also like racism mm-hmm. playing a role in there. And I had a lot of black friends, and I was one of the only white kids that really, I mean, like eventually a lot of white kids started having black friends, but I was the one who was specifically, a lot of my friend group was black. And I think that's also why I can dance well. It was like a combination of me like being gay and like hanging out with my black friends, where I was like, oh, that's why I can like break dance now. And that's how I like kind of bridged the gap. You know, the other white kids saw a white kid that could dance and they were like, oh, like, that's kind of cool. Like, where did you learn that from? And I was like, from my black friends. And they were like, oh, we should hang with them. It was like super, it was an interesting dynamic there. But that was an interesting part of like growing up there too, is just like all these like different influences made me want to like explore it more, but I couldn't, if that makes sense. I couldn't explore like being in plays. I couldn't explore being like doing debate in MUN because that was seen as like a black thing. I couldn't play basketball because that was a black thing, right? Like, but then obviously having my American dad and my mom, she was like super supportive. They were like, yeah, for sure, but just make sure you're doing rugby too. So I had to do like tons of extracurriculars just to get through to do what I wanted to do. I had to basically like prioritize what they wanted me to do too.
In order to fuel the shadow campaign, really.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about religion. What is the base, what is the core religion or the most popular religion in Zimbabwe?
It's Christianity.
So it's Catholicism, is there a, is it?
To be honest with you, I don't know the actual like numbers. I knew I grew up with a lot of Seventh-day Adventists. I know I grew up with a lot of, quite a few Catholics, to be honest with you. But a lot of the evangelical community is big there. They have a big community center there. It's called the Celebration Center. Like, we grew up with that a lot and had a few interesting experiences there too. And so, yeah, it was interesting growing up with so many variations of Christianity. And having, I was one of three Mormons.
Yeah, like and that was, I want to jump into that. Like, what was the church like in your area, your neighborhood, the LDS church? Was it large, influential, small branch? What was that like?
Yeah, we had a ward. When it was first beginning, I remember we had like one stake for the whole country. And then I think it's expanded now to, it's like 8 stakes now. But growing up, yeah, that was pretty much the consensus. It was like 1 or 2 stakes. And I was one of, like I said, I was one of a few white kids in the church. There was an interesting like dynamic because apparently, like, if I remember correctly, my grandfather was the first, like, one of the only white people that stayed, I think, after the blacks in the priesthood change. And so he would end up going and like helping run branches in very rural areas. And I think that's honestly why I think he had a lot of influence in that too. Like, and me not being racist towards black people, because that was, you know, very apartheid racism.
That's right, yeah.
And I think that helped him a lot because he was raised in those types of communities. And it was the same. And you saw small parts of it in him. But for the most part, it was just like the church kind of was like, you need to be more open to that idea. So I think that was a help and benefit there for me.
That's a tough dichotomy as well, because you do have the apartheid issue, mm-hmm. and then you had everything prior to June 9th, 1978.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the church, that was a very difficult time for people of color within the church. And then it just takes Bruce R. McConkie standing at a pulpit to say, forget everything we said about the topic, and tomorrow is a new day.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very difficult for members of the church. And I would only assume that it was even more problematic for people who are living outside of the United States.
Yeah.
Who were most immersed in that culture. Did you serve a mission?
I did serve a mission.
Where'd you go?
I went to Canada Vancouver Mission.
Cold?
Very cold.
Completely different than Zimbabwe.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing. When I got called to Canada Vancouver, I was like, I'm gonna die. Like, I was like, I'm African, I'm gonna die in the cold. And then I got up there and you realize like Vancouver's actually not as cold. It's just rainy, you know? And so like that was the part of it. And then the thing is that the mission goes like way towards Alaska almost. And I always tried to ironically joke that I was gonna get sent to the far north to die. And then I did, and I was like, okay, in the middle of winter, I think there was one day where we had 7 feet of snowfall.
That's a good storm.
Yeah, I was like, that's insane. Like, I'd never, you know, it was the first time experiencing anything below like -10. Like, that was crazy to me that like it could get worse. And I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, it was really cold. So
eventually maybe before we jump out of mission, what was mission life like? Any internal struggles, anything that you remember was remarkable in terms of your sexuality?
So that was the first time I ever admitted it, to be honest with you. I had an interesting thing growing up where obviously experimentation is a thing as a teenager. And so you go through experimentation, and eventually what ended up happening was that I basically just told myself, like, if I just stop with experimentation, then I can go on my mission and I'll be fine. I don't have to say it out loud. And so I think a year and a half before I left on my mission, I just stopped and I was like, I'm just going to do the right things, be a good person, try not to do anything like that. So that was like what I told myself. I was like, I shouldn't do that. And I did for the longest time, came to BYU, put in my papers at BYU, and it was all good. I still knew I was gay because, I don't know, you just know at that point. So on my mission, I repented to my mission president, and I was like, hey, this is what I'm going through currently right now. And I will say that I felt kind of unburdened in a lot of ways. It was the first time that I had ever said, like, oh, I've been gay. Like, oh, this is my first time saying it out loud, I'm gay. He was like, okay, well, like, do you think you can marry a woman? Obviously, you're a missionary. So you're like, of course I can marry a woman. Like, that's...
And this is Mormonism. Give me five.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to get married, right? So that was, like, a big thing for me. I was like, I was like, of course I can marry a woman. Like, that's definitely what I'm going to do. And then I came back from my mission and slowly started to realize, like, I just can't. I was like, I can't do that. I can't live that lie. Also, I don't want to, like, hurt someone who's genuinely in love with me and I am not in love with them in the same way. And so, like, that was an interesting process to go through. And then what ended up happening was that while I was on my mission, I also went to therapy for it because it was the first time I was addressing these issues and I went through a suicidal episode for the first time. Mm-hmm. I had had like suicidal tendencies beforehand, but again, in Zimbabwe, it's like, you're not a man if you're complaining about depression, you're not a man if you want to address your emotional issues. And so all these things like contributed to me just trying to hide it away. And it was my first time again, letting it out, letting these emotions out. And then when I went to the therapy session, I was just like bawling. I was like, it was the first time experiencing like actually being able to talk about something that for, what, at that point, 20 years, had been hidden away. And it felt amazing. But it also was such a hard time for me because I'm in the middle of my mission, trying to be a good missionary. And now I have to, like, address these things that I've been taught not to be comfortable with. So it was really hard for that. I think it was, like, 3 months that I went through all of that. And then I realized the importance of therapy, though, and like talking stuff out. And that's why when I came back from my mission, I didn't immediately come out to all my family, but I did have my siblings ask me. I had two siblings ask me. My first is my sister Hannah, who's like been a support the whole time, right? Like, amazing. She asked me one night because she was the first person to ever catch me like looking at shirtless men on the computer, right? Like, I was like,
or driving down the Walmart underwear aisle. Yeah. And you're like slowing the cart,
like,
down.
Oh, something's up. Yeah, so it was interesting because I grew up with that dynamic. And so she had always been wondering because she was the only one to ever like have an experience with it. And so she asked me one night, she was just like, can you just like let me know? And that's when I was like, yeah, it's time to tell people. And so I told my sister, I told my next sister. And then it was just a slow progression of going from sibling to sibling, and then eventually my parents. And yeah.
So what were their reactions? How did, because often when people are closeted, they fear coming out to their family the
yeah.
most.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons. Most of those reasons are fear of rejection.
Yeah.
So how did, I'm guessing your sisters took it well?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, the shocking thing. What I do think helped with that, though, is I have a lesbian aunt who she's married to an amazing woman, and they're, like, amazing. And so what I think that helped kind of prep my family in a lot of ways, because I remember when she came out, and she came out, like, way later in life, I can't remember the exact age, but way later on in life. And I remember when she told my dad, I know that he had like a struggle with it, you know, but he still loved her. And so he was like, she's my sister, because she's amazing. She's hilarious as well. And so it was kind of cool to see that happen. And while growing up, I think that was when I was like 16, was when she told him. And so like that was like an interesting thing, or at least she addressed it with him in person.
Which is a pivotal part of your life as well. Like exactly. Being 16, like, I remember that time too.
Yeah, well, that's when you're like peak puberty. You're like,
that's right.
I have all these feelings and I know I'm attracted to guys. Yeah, so that was like an interesting thing to watch it. Like, well, it was my first exposure to having someone in my life close to me, again, say it out loud, and watching that happen with my dad and watching my dad's reaction. But it was also kind of scary because I watched my dad kind of come to terms with it and accept it. But I was like, oh, but it was such a hard thing for my dad to do because he has been taught all this sort of stuff. What was interesting about me coming out, though, was my sister's... I only found this out a few weeks ago, actually. So, again, my sister Hannah, because she's basically had it as long as I have, because I was 14 when she found it, and that was like my first... you know, exposure to it. That was like my first like experimentation with anything like that. And so she's kind of held on to the secret just as long as I have, in a lot of ways. And so she eventually told she would like tell my sisters before I'd tell them, sort of idea. And she'd be like, no, don't you dare be shocked. don't you, sort of thing. Not necessarily don't dare be shocked, but just like, get ready because he's going to tell you and you need to be loving and supportive of him.
She was priming the well.
Yeah, exactly. And so she did that for the ones that I was most scared of, which is I have a very... I won't say necessarily that they're very conservative, but I have a sister and a brother-in-law who are more conservative-leaning, and I have my parents. And, you know, I grew up with my parents talking about these things, like they were, like, terrible. And so I was, like, nervous and I was like, oh, you know, they've taught me to be... one type of way my whole life, and now I have to tell them that I'm not what they think I am. And that was a really hard thing for me because I was like, I don't know, you go through life, I don't know, it's interesting because they're so proud of you and you're scared that that pride is going to disappear as soon as you tell them that you're gay because of the culture in a lot of ways. And it's, again, it's multiple cultures. It's the African Zimbabwean culture. It's in particular, the white African Zimbabwean culture, that was very, like, no gay people, very racist, like, all those sort of stuff. And they had kind of grown up with me, like, pushing against all those bricks, and now it was, like, the final one, right? Like, I had a lot of black friends growing up, and I'm gay, and, like, all this sort of stuff. And then for my sister, it was interesting because I came out to both of them expecting the worst, and coming out with the best, because I told my parents, and that night was just amazing because we just went through the long history. This is personal information, but I had actually, during my period of experimentation, I had been blackmailed. And I was like, this is the situation, this is what I had to go through, and they had no idea. And so that was something super hard to go through by myself. And then to finally get it out there and tell them, I think it was very eye-opening for them because they were like, you know, we didn't know. We didn't had no idea. And they just loved me. It was a really cool moment. They just hugged me and we just cried a little bit. And so it was really cool.
Or a lot bit.
A lot bit, yeah. And then my other sister... Megan, this is just more of a funny story, but I told her because I was very worried. I was like, oh my goodness. And I told her, again, she had been primed by Hannah. And I go, eventually she was just like, hey, I need to talk to you. And I was like, oh, she probably knows. And I asked my sister Hannah, and she's like, yes, I told them. Okay, I'm sorry. Like, it just needs to happen. I go and tell them. And my sister Megan was just like, dude, like, I am a cosmetologist. Like, I went to cosmetology school. She was like, I've only had, like, a lot of gay friends. And she was like, I'd be the most comfortable with it, if anything. And that was shocking to me, too, because that just shows me, like, oh, maybe I'm just a bit of a pessimist when it kind of comes to this sort of stuff. And that was about 3 weeks ago. And that kind of gave me the courage to be like, okay, well, maybe it's a public thing. Maybe I'm judging people too much within the community. And maybe they will be supportive. And maybe I can... you know, I can be open with this and not have to worry about it anymore.
Sure. So at what age were you when you came out to your parents?
That was 23.
So a few years ago.
Yeah, a few years ago.
Let's fast forward then to that coming out experience and then all the things that you started doing at BYU in terms of your Mormon memes,
yep.
The dating show.
Yep.
Let's kind of walk through that because I want to now try to understand exactly how this gay kid who has already come out to his family is now on a straight dating show.
Yeah.
And your comedy routines all center around your straight dating life.
Yeah.
So let's start unpacking that.
Yep.
Tell the listeners a little bit about what you're doing in the social media world. Mm-hmm. What you're best known as, because I'm sure many of our listeners are very well aware of who and what you are.
Yeah.
But for those who aren't.
Yeah. So I am Provoho Life. I'm also Dan Ban Bam on TikTok and Instagram. Those are my personal accounts, but Provoho Life's the meme account. And I started when I first moved here, I knew I wanted to do social media, like funny social media, just as like a hobby, nothing too serious. I was just like, oh, it'll be funny to have like a viral video. That'd be hilarious. And created a couple videos and they didn't really go anywhere. And I was like, okay.
Maybe. I'm not as hilarious as I thought.
Yeah.
More rocks my self-esteem backpack.
Yeah, well, that was... And then I did, like, Reddit, and I started making memes on Reddit, and I was like, oh, like, Reddit likes me, but, like, I guess people here don't like me. And so, and then I would try and submit... And I love these guys. I love Norman memes and the Black Mormons, but I'd submit stuff, and, like, they wouldn't go anywhere, you know? And I was like, oh, well, maybe I'm not that funny here. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to start my own meme account and see what happens, like, see if there's any influence there. And what ended up happening was I started posting memes and I followed like 500 people and then I think only 300 stayed and I was like, okay, I'll just keep that 300 and hopefully organically it grows and slowly but surely, like over time, it picked up and then like, what really happened is that a lot of the other meme accounts, there was a bunch of us that had kind of created meme accounts together. Telestial, Latter-day Saint, Basic Provo Bro, Bishop's Office, and myself, we kind of all started in the same realm, same age of memeing, I guess. Because you had the Norman memes and Black Mormons. They were like their own thing at that point. So we didn't really know how to like get in contact with them. So we were like, we'll just kind of support each other and hopefully it builds it up. And so that's what ended up happening. We would like switch back and forth, posting each other's memes, and build up our audiences. And then it reached a point where it started getting like bigger. And I was like, oh, okay, like this is more than I thought. And like, I remember the first time I hit 10,000 followers, I was like, this is insane. Like, how have I reached this point? And like, what am I going to do with this stuff now?
Because pressure.
Like, yeah, it's pressure like to perform essentially. You're like, oh, I have to pump out so many memes. And that really was kind of scary. And at the same time that this was all happening, I started doing stand-up. I had kind of already done stand-up before the memeing thing, and I was like, this is fine. But really, like, it started, like, I was getting paid to do stand-up gigs at that point. And I was like, okay, like, maybe this is something that I should also explore. But it was, like, kind of pressured because it was like, oh, both of these things are going really well. All of a sudden, and I'm not sure how to balance it all. And then eventually what ended up happening is I got contacted by a dating show called The Provo Bachelor. They slid in my DMs and they were like, hey, we're starting a dating show and we want to promote it. Could you help us promote the first season? And so I did. I was like, that's a funny concept. Like, I'll just post it on there. So I ended up posting it on my meme page.
Funny concept, because let's be honest, this is Provo, this is BYU.
Yeah, it's so niche.
But by the time they start filming, they're already engaged and married.
Yeah.
And with two children by the time the third episode in the season is...
Well, that's the honest truth. It's like, so many people get it. Like, we had even a guy from our season got almost immediately engaged after he left, like a few weeks after. And I think the same thing happened in the first season too. She was like, there was a girl who was like, oh, I'm dating someone and I'm leaving and getting married. And it's like, oh, it's that quick of a process, you know? And so that was like, that's why I thought it would be funny. I was like, if anything, I'd just get good meme content from this, good engagement. And so I was like, yeah, let's see how that goes. And obviously being a part of the BYU community at this point, I was like, okay, we'll see what happens. Posted it, first season aired. It was really cringy and really bad. But what was interesting was that all these like non-member YouTube accounts and all these like crazy accounts were like, Noel Miller was jumping on it. And I was like, it's interesting that so many people...
Big names.
Yeah, big names are like attaching themselves to this weird niche dating show in Provo. And so it started picking up and I was like, that's really cool. That's funny. And then they posted and they were like, hey, we're looking for our second season. This time it will be Bachelorettes and we'll see what happens. Or they at that point, I think they were just saying Bachelorette. They're like, we're looking for guys. So I was like, oh, as a joke...
I'm interested.
Yeah, as a joke on my meme page, I was like, should I do this sort of thing? And the poll was very unanimously like, yes, you should do the dating show. That would be hilarious. I would watch you because of that sort of idea. And I was like, oh, okay, like that'll be fun. So I messaged them. Remington, I think, was running their social media at that point, and he sent me like a winky face, and he was like, "Ooh, you just send us an application, we'll see what we can do." Winky face. Got the application, and I was super scared. To be honest with you, I'll be real with you. At that point, I was like, "Well, I'm gay. I shouldn't do this." So I missed my first interview with them on purpose. I was like, "I'm not. I don't want to do this. Maybe this isn't the right thing to do." Sort of thing. And then Remington was just like, oh no, you don't have to come for the first interview, you can come for the second interview, just come to the second interview and we'll interview you there. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, like whatever. And at that point I was just like, you know what, it's just for fun. And that's when the thought crossed my mind of like, maybe this is a good thing. If you're gonna come out eventually, at least let the Provo community know like you're a normal human being. Because there's a lot of weird stigmas that our community puts on gay people and puts on people.
It's a great point.
Yeah, they just have like these weird stigmas where they're just like, oh, well, they're not like... I'll be honest with you. This is a straight up statement. I feel like they'd like dehumanize a lot of like behavior because they're like, well, they're not quite fully human. And a lot of people can argue that point and say like, well, that's not true. But like, it is kind of true. You experience it firsthand when you're living in Provo. You know, people pass comments and all sorts of stuff all the time. And it's usually just microaggressive stuff, right? It's never like insane, outright, homophobia. It's usually just like little things that they like to...
It's like, just enough to make sure that you know that you're living in the great and spacious building and they're holding onto the rock.
The separation, right? And so that's why I was like, maybe this is like a right thing to do in helping people see that. And it will be fun at the same time. I was like, I'll come out with friends and we'll see what happens. And so that ended up happening. I obviously did the dating show. And all throughout, you can see that I'm definitely the gay best friend the whole time. And that was the other thing, like behind the scenes, like, again, I was like influencing that sort of stuff. But then it reached a point where I was like, getting just too busy on the dating show, and I knew that it wasn't going anywhere. And so I asked B off camera, I was like, hey, do you mind if I get like eliminated? And she was like, that's perfectly fine, that's okay. We're excited, happy. And then I was like, yeah, you should go with Walker and Keaton because they're amazing and they're great guys. And so she was like, okay, great. And then there was some weird drama on the show, if people know and have watched the show, stuff went down with Lauren and Austin, where they like switched teams, and so I had to stay an extra week, and so that was an interesting thing. And then the day I got eliminated, I contacted my lesbian aunt, Linda. She's amazing, again, love her so much. Contacted her and I came out to her for the first time, and I was like, I'm gay and I'm thinking I want to do this publicly. I don't want to hide it anymore. Because it was just like weird pressure when I got eliminated. I was like, what are people going to think? And I was like, let me just get it over and done with. Like, let me just let people know. And, you know, my Aunt Linda was just kind of like, we love you, we support you. Obviously, like, that's amazing. Just remember you're at BYU and like, you need to be safe. Like, don't risk it all. You're graduating in April. just think about it. And I was like, okay. So I took that and I just started like thinking about it more and more. The show came out. People liked it a lot because I think at that point, a lot of people had seen me on my meme account. I'm one of the only memers who regularly posts his face and regularly posts his own content on his meme page. And so it's not just memes. It's also like my videos where I discuss weird Provo issues or like I'll make commentary on Provo issues and that sort of thing. And so that like I think helped because a lot of people really liked me from the show. From the get-go, I was a fan favorite. They were like, Dan is so awesome. He's so chill. Let's see what happens. And slowly as the show progressed, they were just like, Daniel's amazing. Daniel's amazing. And I saw all these comments. But with that also came a lot of girls being very, very interested in me and being like, oh, you want to go on a date?
Naturally, that's how it's going. Like, yeah. Oh, it didn't work on the show, but it would work with me.
Like, yeah. And I'm sure every like LGBTQ Mormon has been in the situation where they feel like a total douche because they have to reject someone, you know, because they're like, well, and that's the thing. The reaction is usually like, they're a terrible person. They don't want to go on a date with me.
They just ghosted me or.
Yeah. And it's like, you don't understand like why I'm ghosting you. Like, I just want to say it, but I can't because you have to stay quiet about it. Right. So I was like, I had like hundreds of messages and I was like, okay, like, this is getting out of hand. I don't want to be in anyone's bag. Like, I want to be in everyone's good graces, basically. And so at that point, I was like, oh my goodness, like, is this something that I'm going to have to do soon? And I talked to my sister Hannah again. And Hannah was like, can you just do it? Can you just get it over and done with? She's like, I'm tired of not telling people. I'm tired that I have to, like, jump around conversations. She's like,
my own brother who's gay is on a straight dating show, like, yeah. It's already awkward.
Yeah, she's like, it's so bad, like, it's so weird because she's like, people keep wanting me to set you up with their friends. And so it was really interesting because that was what was happening. It wasn't just for me, it was my family who knew as well. They were like, what are we supposed to tell people? Like, we keep lying to people. And that was like a big thing, like a big thing. I was like, it's a lie. That's what the realization was like. I am lying to people. I'm like, that's, if anything that I've been taught my whole life, it's that lying is bad. And so I was like, I need to stop lying. I need to tell people. And I think I'm in a good enough spot where I can do that. It's like, clearly people enjoy me and I've done what I set out to do. I was like, I knew that I was going to come out eventually. And I think it's the right time right now when people really are seeing me as a human being who really just cares about his community and cares about people's perspective in that situation. I was like, let me come out now. So I contacted, first thing I did is I messaged a whole bunch of my friends because I knew I needed to, like, you know, you don't want to just like wake up and have your best friend be like,
oh, why don't you tell me?
Oh, yeah. So I messaged a bunch of my friends, close friends that I was both nervous about and scared to tell for many different reasons. You know, working together on meme accounts and working together on content. A lot of them are very, very, very heterosexual guys, right? Like, very, like, bros. I was like,
they all work at Vivint.
Yeah. Well, they're all in the business school. And yeah. I know that much. So, like, I was like, okay, maybe they're going to react badly. And so I was nervous. I was very scared. But what I saw from the initial, I told all of them, and all of them were super supportive. There wasn't a bad one in the bunch. Every single person was like, I am here for you. I don't care what anyone else thinks. You're amazing. You're fantastic. Just super supportive and loving.
And I know Taekwondo.
I know Taekwondo. I can teach you. Defend yourself. So that was like an interesting thing for me was like, I was like, okay, that's basically just kind of testifying to the fact that maybe I'm a bad person. I was like, I came out to my family and was super loving and supportive, even though I thought that would be bad. I came out to my friends. And I thought that would be bad, but it was not. And I was like, okay, the next step is obviously just come out. So that Friday, I got with a few of the friends that I had texted. I was like, can we film? It was interesting. I had actually some of the crew members, one of the crew members from Provost Most Eligible, she helped me, Sophie. She helped me film it along with Jake from the show, who's also on the show. We had become good friends since he was like, yeah, let me help you out. He's an ad major, so he knows how to like film stuff. And then I had my friends Olivia and Scout also there, and they were just like their support. We filmed in their apartment. And I'll say this, it was very intense. We filmed like a lot of footage. I want to say like 20 something minutes of footage. And we only ended up using like 5 of it, just because I think it was the first time that I was really just talking about everything. I was like, this is what I've gone through. This is everything that I've experienced. And the initial reaction to the video was I sent it to my family and I was like, what do you guys think? And they were like, the initial reaction was they were like, we love it and we care about the longer version of this video. But they were like, but you don't sound excited. You sound sad. And they were like, you're gay. Like, you should be proud about that. And that was really funny to hear from my family. Like, they were like, you need to be happy. They were like, this is an exciting time for you. And I was like, okay. Like, yeah, I like realized that. And that's when I was like, I started editing the video how I wanted it to, but I made the point of like, I was like, I want to get with everyone in the family and we're going to finish it. I finished the video with being like, I'm Daniel Spencer and I'm gay. And they were all cheering. And that was like something they wanted to do. That's something I wanted to do. And so that was like a really cool moment. Like, we all just like hugged afterwards, and it was just a really fun moment for me. And it was a really cool moment to see the support that I was getting from them. And then immediately I posted that video, and the overwhelming reaction, other than a few people, was love and support.
Really positive.
Really, really positive. I was very shocked at... Well, I'll say this. When I first posted on Provo Ho Life, I immediately lost about 50 followers. I was tracking it because I was very scared. That was my biggest fear. It was like, is there going to be a backlash from this? Am I going to lose thousands of followers because of just saying I'm gay, you know? And that's not necessarily an irrational reaction to it. It has been done, you know.
That's right.
People have gone through rejection in the LGBTQ community. Like, it's been done. So it was like, yeah, that could happen. And that was just how I had to kind of reach that point of saying, like, I don't care what reaction comes. We'll see what happens. Posted it, 50 followers down immediately. And I was like, within a few minutes, I think it was 10 minutes, I'd lost 50 followers. And I was like, oh no, like,
I'm not hitting refresh again.
I put my phone down. Yeah. I was like, I can't do this. I put my phone down and I just sat with my family for a bit. I think I sat with them for about an hour. Occasionally got a text from a friend. Initially it was like slow, a couple friends here and there texting like, we love and support you, and just responding to them really. And then I went back on and I think it had jumped back up, I think 300 followers at that point. And I think it ended up being something about like 300 extra followers from that. And then I had also posted, I'm not like huge on TikTok, but I have about 550,000 followers on there. And so I posted on there. Obviously, the overwhelming reaction on TikTok was like, oh, we knew, right? Because they're not members. So they were like, yeah, like, that was pretty obvious. You're pretty gay on this app. And I was like, I am pretty gay on TikTok, yeah. And so they started translating over to my regular account, Dan Bam Bam. And that was even crazier because I think I saw an influx of like almost 2,000 followers. Was it 2,000 followers? I can't remember the exact number, but it went up.
Substantially.
Yeah, substantially. And so I was like, wow, like, this is really cool. I was like, this is, whether it was going to help someone, which was the goal, obviously, to come out, I was like, whether it's going to help someone or not, like, it was cool to see for me that maybe the world and the community we live in isn't as bad as I think it is. You know what I mean? Or maybe it's seeing progress because of, you know, you talked about them previously, because of the, oh, because, like, because of you, this sort of stuff, right? Like, there's people that have come before me who have done this stuff and who have really gone through all of the crap to put me in a space where I can show them that their work has paid off.
I often compare this to like this road isn't full of boulders anymore. It's actually paved. It's smooth.
Yeah.
And for a large portion of this path, you just have to get on it.
Yeah.
You just have to ride it.
Yeah.
And then you're going to find a few family members that are boulders or friends that are boulders or BYU honor code. It's a boulder. Like, but you still can traverse that that trail quite easily.
Yeah. And that's what I like. That's what I was so impressed with. I was like, and that's when I reflected on it. I was like, the reason that I'm seeing all this stuff is because of other people's efforts before me, right? Like, I couldn't have done this without the Matty Eastons and the Charlie Birds and like all these other people who had come up before. I couldn't have done it without my aunt, like, coming up first. Like, that is like a big thing for me in my life. And so like that's when I started reflecting and being like more grateful that I had gone through all this sort of stuff and more grateful that I had come out of it with a positive attitude. And I think that's what the point is, right? The point is we need to come out and share our stories because it will help the generations after us, right? Someone's going to look at different videos or like see the history behind it and say, oh, the reason why my parents are okay with this is because of other people who my parents loved and cared about, came out and shared their stories and were able to, like, I don't know, help them notice the love there.
When you start putting a seal of living reality on this topic, the whole dynamic changes.
Yeah.
And I see that with bishops and stake presidents and moms and dads and brothers and sisters. When it's one thing to have an idea or a preconceived notion or even rhetoric surrounding this topic, but then when that all crumbles because a son or a daughter or someone close to them comes out, then it changes.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting that it's unfortunate that it often takes that. It takes someone being so close to them who comes out as LGBTQ. But the point is exactly as you said, getting stories out there, sharing those experiences where people can draw a connection.
Yeah.
And whether it's a viral social media content provider and someone in the dark of the night in the very depths of the closet can look at that and say, well, if Dan can come out, I can come out.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take a huge huge TikTok following or Instagram following or Twitter following. It just takes honesty and authenticity.
Yeah, I totally. Well, that was the thing. My dad, I think when I told my dad initially, like, it was funny. My dad told me a few years ago, he was like, you know, I used to think like, oh, gay people are made gay. He was like, but after this whole experience and after really like reflecting on it myself, he was like, I know for a fact that you're born gay because I've seen you. He was like, you grew up with being my son. And so that was like an interesting thing too. It was like that observation of like, it's really cool to watch those people change too, right? Those people like gain perspective all of a sudden. Like it's like a click. Like when I texted my friends, right? Like I'd grown up, like, I'd been at BYU and they'd pass like interesting comments here and there. Nothing like crazy, but like interesting comments. And then getting the text messages and now being in the group chats with them. Like I was like expecting them to like kick me out of the group chat and be done. And like, I was like, oh, it's going to be so uncomfortable. They've been like so cool about it. Like so we laugh about it all the time. Like it's so interesting to see that like that's where we're at now. And I'm so like, and it's only been a few weeks really. And it's like, it's exciting to know that like other people are going to do the exact same thing that I've done and change the exact same kind of perspective around them. And I think that's just all we need more in the church is just more exposure, more people seeing that we are who we are and we're not afraid to be who we are.
Great point. What is your advice to church leaders?
That is an interesting one. My advice is to just, because I've had leaders who have been very offish about when I told them that I was gay, and I've had leaders who have been very supportive. My particular advice in this situation, or in any situation where you're dealing, anyone who's kind of gone through something that I've gone through, is just love them no matter what. Don't look at it from a this is my interesting point. I think every time that I've gone to a church leader that wasn't comfortable with it, they always just jump to conclusions. That if I was telling them that I was gay, that I clearly had issues and I had problems with the church, that I wasn't okay with it. And that offended me more and made me want to distance myself more because I was like, no, well, that's not what I'm feeling. Like, I'm not trying to tell you that I don't like where the church is. I'm just trying to tell you that I'm gay and I need some support. And that was really hard for me. Where I gained perspective, though, was from the leaders who didn't do that. The leaders who were like, I care about you. What do you need? Right? Like, what do you want me to do? What advice do you want? And I was like, oh, like someone's asking me how I feel about this stuff. And like, again, that was something that I went through. I remember I had one bishop who like helped me get into therapy and helped me. It was when I went through like actual suicidal like stuff. And I was like, he was like, we're going to help you. We're going to make this happen. Let's figure this out. And that was also mostly because of my family too, but he was willing to help, which was the biggest difference. Obviously I can't speak to policy or anything like that change wise, but I do want to see more change in terms of being able to help in particular LGBTQ youth in the church, right? I don't think we put enough of an emphasis on that. And I know for a fact that, well, that's the thing. Suicide is such a big thing here, especially in Utah. And I know for a fact, experiencing that myself, it is because we have to stay quiet about this sort of stuff.
Marginalized.
We're marginalized, yeah. And no one's talking about it. No one's discussing it. I've had people message me on my account and be like, well, the reason, they were like, there's no real like data that backs that it's LDS youth that are killing themselves because they're gay. I was like, well, the reason that's happening is because they are LDS. Like, what LDS youth is going to come forward and be like, yes, I'm gay, when they're scared to do that? Which is why they need more people to come out and show them it's okay. But two, what parent is going to volunteer their child or give permission for their child to say I'm gay too? And that's, again, where we need to have more conversation.
Yeah, and the other point of that is the great Mormon message that is that a mission, marriage, and children fixes this. Mm-hmm. Or it'll all just go away. Get married, find yourself a wife.
Yep.
And the reality is, why taint relationships or a family relationships, a future spouse, with that type of information if it will just go away?
Yeah.
Which is another aspect of why so many people stay so closeted.
Yeah.
If there's anything that I could say to add to that message that you're talking about, is that it won't go away.
Yeah.
There is no therapy that converts that. There is nothing that changes that sexuality. And as many good and well-intentioned Latter-day Saints out there who believe that I could just shove this in a box and by not acknowledging it, it won't happen to me, that's not true.
Yeah.
And no amount of therapy will change that. No amount of avoidance or even just talking about it changes it either.
Yeah.
The reality is, if you're gay, you're gay.
You're gay, you're
if
gay.
You're lesbian, you're lesbian.
Yep.
If you're trans, that's just how it works.
Yep.
And by I guess my point, by hiding it and by keeping it bottled up, it isn't going to get any better.
No.
Not you at all. Have to come out.
Yeah. That's like the biggest thing for me right now, is I just want people to know that it's okay. Like, I just want kids to know that they don't have to go and, you don't have to sit in your room and cry at night knowing that, like, well, this is something I didn't put in my video because I knew it was like a big thing. But you often think this was my mentality when I was going through all that depression. My immediate thought was, well, if I end it now, I'll go to the celestial kingdom because I'm not bad yet, right? It's like, if I keep living, because I knew I was gay, I was like, I'm not gonna marry a girl for sure. And I was like, but there's the risk of me maybe getting with a guy, and right, that was like a big thing. And I was like, well, if I kill myself now, that's gonna help me. It's like, no, that should never be the mentality for anyone. That should never be the first option, right? That should never be an option, period. And that was like a big thing for me. That's another reason why I did it, because I was like, I've been through that fire. I've been through like the weird, like just the weird stigmas and like thinking badly of myself because of what I've heard, rather than simply accepting myself and saying like, it's okay to be gay. And then, like I said, the journey has been long, but because of people like you, because of a lot of people coming out before me, it's helped me realize the importance of that and like being just another voice. Because, like, honestly, I don't have a ton of influence other than in the Provo community. And I think that just adds to it, though. This is just another voice. We just need more and more voices to add to it.
That's right. And we need, and I love your advice to church leaders. And that needs to, in my opinion, needs to go further. Currently on the church's Mormon and Gay website, the talk from Elder Wickman and Oak still exists, saying that don't worry about this. This goes away in the resurrection. This is a mortal flaw that'll be fixed.
Yeah.
Not backed up by any doctrine, not backed up by any policy. But yet that perpetuates this idea that, I mean, nothing seems more inviting than suicide at that point when you're just told by an apostle and a general authority that the resurrection will fix you, that all this goes away in the next life.
Just wait for it, yeah.
And people look forward to the opportunity to die,
yeah,
to get rid of it, instead of facing that fear of coming out,
yeah,
and facing that reality. And we have to fix that. We have to change that.
Yeah.
And
change the narrative. Entirely.
Change the narrative, absolutely. That rhetoric has got to go.
Yeah.
And slowly that's happening. I know there was another controversial talk on from Elder Hafen on Mormon and Gay as well. And just as of last week, it was removed finally. So slowly the church...
I haven't looked at that website. I'm going to do it right after this. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah. MormonandGay.LDS.org.
Okay.
Or Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day... Or ChurchofJesusChrist.org now. But the Mormon, I think you can actually get MormonandGay.org. But yeah, it's important that we know that we have to change that narrative. And a lot of that old rhetoric that was taught, the archaic beliefs, are gone.
Yeah.
We have now received further light and knowledge.
Yeah.
New and continuing revelation. And a lot of that is just, again, based on the things that we've talked about today, just getting to the point where you understand that this is a real lived experience with people who we're talking about real people's lives and real people's experiences, and from that we're able to move forward in this topic. What is your advice to someone closeted listening to this podcast episode?
Oh, that's a good one. It's the same advice again. Just, I think the world isn't as dark as you think it is, and even if it is, you have such a support group. Like, I came out and there was so much love, in particular from LGBTQ community and just in Utah in general. Like, I think that there's a lot more support than you think there is. There's a lot more love where you think there isn't. And at the end of the day, coming out will just add to it. That's what I'm kind of realizing.
Great. Perfect advice. Anything we haven't talked about that you want to bring up?
I don't know if I have. Yeah, I think we covered everything. Oh, I'm doing a show for the Trevor Project.
Let's talk about it. Yeah, because that's happening now. Yeah,
I think that's another sign of progress too. I went to be honest with you, the week before I came out that same week on Tuesday. It was like the Tuesday of that week. They had BYU had its first ever LGBTQ. I don't know what it was necessarily, like, conference sort of thing. It was just where you could go as a student and listen to and talk to LGBTQ students going through all this sort of stuff and really get to know them and their experiences. And I thought that was really cool because I went there just kind of looking for advice. I was like, look, I'm going to come out and, like, this is what's going down. And so that was really cool and eye-opening for me. And I think it was eye-opening for a lot of the students that went there. But even more so, what's happening now in terms of progress, Humor U, I'm a part of the stand-up comedy club on campus, obviously. And we felt very passionately that we needed to do a show for the Trevor Project. We were like, yeah, like, we should do Trevor Project. Obviously, because, again, it's something that's very closely related to me. And I think related to a lot of the comedians, because we've all been in some sort of, you know, suicidal depression or just depression in general. And if we just want to contribute to that. So we were like, yeah, we'll do Trevor Project. And we presented it to BYUSA. And what was so interesting was that BYUSA immediately was like, we want to work with you guys to do this show. We want to put it in the Varsity Theater. We think this would be an amazing opportunity to really help people. And I think it just speaks again to the progress that, like, we are seeing and the changes we are seeing. You know, I don't necessarily know what kind of major changes are going to come. But these are the small changes that matter right now, is having students see more of a presence on campus and saying, like, no, you do have gay students and they are going through crap and you need to acknowledge that.
We've come a long ways. 1965, Ernest Wilkinson said if there were any homosexuals on the campus, make yourself known. We'll refund your tuition.
Wow.
We don't want you to contaminate. We don't want the school to be contaminated by your presence.
And now we're doing it in the Wilkinson Center.
Now you're holding an LGBT event in the Wilkinson Center.
It's crazy.
I love it.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and that's progress.
Yeah.
And there are Coke machines on campus.
Yeah, that's another amazing progress there.
And the explanation was always like, well, we didn't have it. There was never a demand for it. So that's why we didn't have it. Oh my gosh.
You're like, I need caffeine.
Yeah. Apparently you've never been to a missionary's apartment. There was demand for caffeine. I agree. There has been progress. And often people will beat up the church leadership or even BYU faculty or staff at BYU for not making enough progress. And I think there could be far more things, a vast amount of things to work on.
You
absolutely
sure.
need to be worked on. But we have made some progress.
Yeah.
Not enough.
There's things moving. There's cogs moving. But we need to get it more in the public view and more out there.
Alaskan molasses is what this is. This is so slow.
Yeah.
It does need to speed up. And I agree with you. Like the Charlie Birds, the Matt Eastons, the Sarah Cunhas, the... Dan Spencer's coming out are all part of that. And a large portion of the audience of this podcast, especially in private conversations that I receive, are BYU students.
Yeah.
There's a large contingent within the Mormon population that identifies on that LGBTQ spectrum.
Yeah.
And so come out wherever you are is my continued advice, because
yes.
there are many more out there just like us.
I love it, man.
Maybe not as many followers on our social media accounts, but come out, because the water's great.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is, and fewer things to fear.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time.
Oh, definitely.
It's been a fascinating interview.
Hey, thank you.
And I commend you. Like I said, the coming out in the heart of the lion's den is no easy task. Add to that the amount of social media presence and following that you have, it's doubly hard because there's that added pressure of, this is my livelihood, this is who I am and what I am. And the beauty of the coming out experience, and maybe we just end here, is that coming out isn't about exposing yourself to vulnerability to other people's perception of who and what you are. But coming out is giving people the opportunity to come in.
Yeah.
You're letting them into your life and giving them an opportunity on your terms, by your invitation, to get to know you better,
yeah.
a greater part of yourself. And I think that's the beauty of the coming out experience, is often we confuse it that we're obligated to tell the world that we're gay or that we're lesbian or anywhere on the LGBTQ spectrum. But the important part of the coming out process is to give people an opportunity to come in
yeah.
and see me, a greater part of me, and understand me for who I am. And we control that narrative. We give people the opportunity to come in. And if they choose not to, thanks.
Yeah.
We gave you the invitation.
Straight up, yeah.
You chose not to show up to the party.
Yep.
I can't be held responsible for not inviting you in
yeah.
to get to know me better. And I think that's the important part of coming out. Great. I look forward to all the things that you're going to do.
Thanks, man.
Because you have a wonderful platform and a great voice, and I thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time here on the podcast to get to know you a little bit better.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. If you have a question for Dan, comment about this episode, click that like, share button, or leave your comment below, especially if you're on one of our social media sites, because one of the easiest and greatest ways of helping to share the message of the podcast is just by simply clicking a like button or sharing this episode and leaving a comment. It gives other users an opportunity to see and interact with the episodes that you have interacted with. And if you are listening on one of our audio versions, we invite you to press the subscribe button and subscribe to this channel wherever you're catching your favorite audio podcasts. The Latter-day Stories podcast is your opportunity to understand the intersection of sexuality and reality where it meets at LGBTQ Avenue and LDS Street. But most importantly, it's episodes just like this that help you to continue writing your Latter-day story.
This episode is a production of Latter Gay Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter Gay Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Make a donation now by texting the word STORIES to 77948. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter Gay stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at LatterGayStories.org.